Good evening. We're going to be talking about navigating religion to non-observant, non-religious, non-Jewish relatives and the like, and how we're going to deal with it. It's not an easy topic. I think it's an important topic. I want to give special thanks to Luda and Sergei, the Gorochovs, for having me over here to do this. We're going to try to do this in two sessions, and we'll see if there's other things that come out. But as I was going through this whole topic, I realized that it's not just about navigating to other people that are non-religious, non-Jewish, and the like, but really for ourselves is how do we incorporate Judaism properly so that as we go through our pathway to our own acceptance, our own Judaism, how do we integrate the best way possible? How do we take on this life where we feel comfortable with our Judaism and the people around us feel comfortable? And it's basically like, how does the Baal Tshuva, is what we call, that's a general term, but how does the Baal Tshuva actually deal with this entire lifelong experience and lifelong growth process? So that's perhaps another topic that we have. So the way we're going to try to break this down is that tonight, hopefully, we'll see, it's all based on your questions and the like, and your topics and your stories that you have, and everybody has rich, amazing stories. Some more painful than others, some funny than others, but we have everybody has different types of topics that they can share about some of the issues that we have. So before I begin, I'm going to turn to you and tell me from my audience over here, give me an issue you're dealing with, a question you're dealing with, anything that brought you here tonight. Random, go. Think about it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
I think this came up in the first place is Elvira and Toli were hosting some friends, and we were invited as well, and the friends are not religious, and we had, I think we started talking about religion, and the sense was that they weren't really ready to receive the information. They weren't really asking questions, but...
They were not asking questions.
They were not asking questions. They were making statements, to which I think we were... We were making statements also, too. And then, anyway, it got heated, and I think it got uncomfortable. And I think the bottom line was that no one really gained anything out of that. And we kind of were talking about, well, maybe this is not... Maybe we should not continue friendship. So that was kind of the...
I'm going to title that as Defending the Throne.
So, right? A specific comment that was made that kind of triggered everything. They were saying that they drove to Shul and Yom Kippur, and I think some of us wanted to point out like why maybe that's not the best thing to do on Yom Kippur. And then there was a comment made like everybody should be able to practice the way they want, and it should be okay.
Okay, so we'll call that you live your life, I live mine. I can't write in this.
And do you just let those comments go, or do you, you know, is it your responsibility to set them straight?
Okay, and we'll call that convincing others.
Or what responsibility do we have? Or what obligation?
No, that's not what you're calling it. Convincing others. Pardon the handwriting. To see the light.
Saying you made the choice to be super kosher, so you can't eat here, or because you do certain things being religious, it's you're acting ultra 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 religious.
Okay, so. You, you ostracize yourselves, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and don't throw your nonsense upon me, kind of thing, right? Anything else?
Well, the same thing with non-observant children, teenagers. To what extent you go to tell them something they should not do?
Okay, then we have the issues of telling. It's all in the same category. Telling family members. How to live.
And what about
how to observe?
What about people who think they know what it's like to be observant, and I think you're just taking it to the extreme? They'll say, "Well, my grandparents were also observant. We read the Torah, but we didn't go crazy."
To the extreme. Right.
Not observant. Their grandparents were rabbis.
Your grandparents were rabbis, right? My grandfather was a rabbi.
Yeah.
And when he ate pork in Yom Kippur, he ate it with a certain kind of sauce. So don't tell me I know what religion is, right? This is the classic response. Okay, so we have some of these issues, which we're going to hopefully address all of these issues tonight. again, defending the throne, I had to get into an argument with the person. How do I deal with that? Number two, you live your life, I live my life. They'll say to you, don't tell me what to do. You want your religion? Fine. I don't have to keep kosher around you. Why do I have to go to the same restaurant 47 times because of the fact that you can't eat at In-N-Out with me, right? Convincing other people to see the light? Come on, you don't understand. This is everything. How could you not see it? It's so obvious. And they're coming back to you saying, you ostracize yourselves. It's not me. We're normal. You're the flake. You're the lunatic over here. You should really look at what we're doing here. Everybody else is normal, but you. It's not us. It really comes down to you. And then how do we tell family members, especially ones that are younger and the like, how do we tell them, look, you need to observe. Come on. This is a real deal. I've seen the light. I see God. You got to do it also. And then as long as they're under my roof, you will keep Shabbos to the best level, greater than the greatest rabbis in the world, because this is my house. Okay, lastly, when they say to you, you're a fanatic, what are you doing? You're a fanatic. How can you know? Like, there are people, you can go slowly at this. You don't have to go all the way like some of these crazy people that I hear live in Israel and things like that, right? You get a lot of these questions. So part of this is the dialogue that they have with you. Part of this is the way they perceive you. And part of it is the way we perceive them. And that's really where we're going to go to tonight. Okay, so when we start off with a concept that we want to make this somewhat organic, even though it's somewhat of a lecture, but I want it organic that if you have things to chime in with, please do so. And I want you to realize that we all have similar issues. Everybody has similar issues on this. Some, as I said, may be harder to deal with than others. We all have similar issues. And we want to really make a Kiddush Hashem. We want to sanctify God's name in the things that we're doing. That's the goal. And of course we want people to see the light. If I came to this myself, I want other people to see how great this is also. But I want to do it in a way that it's also safe and that it's going to make a Kiddush Hashem. So each one of us has a different way we came to Judaism. Some of us are born with it, meaning born with religiosity. Some of us are new to it. Some of us have been doing it for many years. So each person is different, and each person has a different experience how they became religious. Whether they were or they became, each person has a different experience. Therefore, what that actually means, and by the way, when I say religious, it means that they're on a path. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're fully committed, but at least they see that this is where they'd like to go, and they have found a pathway towards religious observance. So it doesn't mean that anyone's here or anyone listening to this is saying like, oh, this doesn't apply to me because I'm not there yet, you know. I'm still eating this or I'm still doing this. No, it means I see a path of where I'd like to get to, and I want to be able to have other people get there, and I want to have other people not attack me for my views and my approaches as to how I'm going to actually do this. Okay, we want to feel safe in our religious journey. Everyone wants to feel safe. Now, think about it. A person who grew up religious and was religious their whole life, and grandfathers and great-grandfathers and grandmothers and great-grandmothers, you know, they're pretty confident in what they have. So someone comes and says, why do you do this? You go, I don't care. I don't have to answer you. I don't know, but I don't care. So they move on. We want to have the level of confidence that whether I know the answer or I don't know the answer, I want to be able to feel comfortable with where I am and my growth process, and I want to continue to be able to grow. Okay, so number one, our goal is not to make this a Kiruv class. Here's how you convince your uncle that he needs to now do this, okay? Here's how you tell your aunt she's got to get rid of the non-Jewish husband. No, that's not what we're trying to do, okay? I don't know how many of you have that aunt, you know? But like, that's not necessarily our goal. Maybe we'll touch upon it and we'll be like, oh, that's a great one. I'm coming to tell him he's nuts for marrying a Jew, you know? It's like that's not necessarily our goal as to what we have, but we might come up with some great ideas, especially from the audience, how we do this. the key is going to be is how we work within our boundaries of what we feel comfortable with, while at the same time having a sense of respect and love for the people that we're dealing with. Now, some of the people we may not even know, and they're going to get into a fight with us because we're at a meal, right, a Shabbos meal with somebody, and someone goes, what are you people even doing? And then someone like, oh no, you've messed with the wrong guy. You take a bandana, you become Rambo, or some other type of fighter who's going to be defending the faith now, and you're not as well equipped as you'd like to be to know the reason behind this and this law, and now you're getting into a fight, and you're like, oh man, I wish I closed my mouth, but I know I'm doing it for God's will, and this is great, and God's going to love me, and I can make such a kiddush Hashem, and then everyone walks away angry, and there's a massive blowout. You're never invited over at that family's house again, because you totally ruined their Shabbos meal, and it's like, whoa, easy, let's take it slow. Let's take it slow. So goal is working within our boundaries, number one. Well, at the same time, on our boundaries means we don't go there. Hey, we don't go there. We don't talk about this, or this is something I'm not going to do, number one. And number two, respect and love. Okay, respect and love is going to be is dealing with a lot of these people is respecting their views, using a lot of psychology to help them to get through this issue, and then and showing love for them. The ultimate goal is really be able to give them a sense of love that you understand that where you're coming from, you love them as a Jew, as a person, and that you're not, putting anything on their back that they actually have to do. Hopefully, maybe we'll be convincing enough that they'll want it, but most importantly is going to be that we're not convincing in our words, we're convincing in our actions that someone's going to look at us and go, wow, that person I really respect. That's amazing, you know? That's really where we want to be able to get people to see our lives and say, what a special human being. Whether they're going to accept upon themselves religion or not, we want them to be able to have that level of experience. In the same way that we came into Judaism or religiosity, it means there's a reason why you did it. Maybe you were convinced by somebody. Maybe you had a warm Shabbos meal. Maybe you had something else that got you. You were shocked into something. Maybe there was something else that brought you there. but keep in mind, there's a reason why you may not have done it for so many years. You may not have been religious for X number of years. And why not? Was it that convincing moment? But what was the other life like? What was that other experience that you did hold dear, that you did enjoy, and you're a little bit jealous, if you will. You're a little bit, you wish, like, I wouldn't mind if I had that again. Oh, that was a good cheeseburger. That was really good. Or whatever, I'm giving you that example. For those that eat cheeseburgers, we're not talking about that for you, you know. You know, there are a number of people, and I'm sure you've gone through these experiences yourselves, where you've gone through something, and it's like, yeah, I do miss that. That was really good. Oh, that was good, right? And the question's going to be is, how do I deal with that? How do I integrate that in my life? And if it was so obvious when you finally came through that this is what I'm doing, this is the path that I'm taking, why wasn't it so obvious years before? What were you missing years before? If it's something that's so blatantly obvious to you right now, shouldn't you be asking, like, how did I miss it? Oh, because that rabbi didn't speak. Come on. There's something else there. Because you had another life that you were living, and you have to be able to come to appreciate that life that you had. And by you appreciating that life that you had, you're actually going to be able to help other people understand you a little bit better. Any questions so far? Did I address anything? No. Good. So the key is like this. When we came to awaken. Now, people say, yeah, Rabbi, you grew up non-religious. No, I didn't. I grew up religious, right? But my religious observance back then was not the same level that it is right now. And, you know, I'm much happier with my level of religiosity and the way that I was before. I was religious, kosher, Shabbos, the whole deal. But I can't say I was as, I don't want to say committed, I wasn't as deeply connected as I am today. And that's an important thing for each of us to realize that every one of us has some element of awakening throughout our life. And that awakening is going to happen at different stages in our life. And we want to know why was it that time that God awakened me? Couldn't I have had it 10 years earlier? 10 years later? So there's a certain element that as much as it's our own free will that brought us into this experience, it was God actually pulling the strings. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God is telling you, now's the time that you're really going to be awakened over here. And a lot of times you hear stories from Baalei Tshuva that they might complain. I've heard it from Rabbinic Baalei Tshuva. They may complain about, you know, that other people didn't convince them well enough. They didn't tell them properly how to do this. You have to realize that God was running a plan over here. He awoke you. He tried waking up 40 times, 50 times. He didn't wake up. Finally, by 51st time, you woke up. You can't blame it on everybody else. There's still an awakening moment that you had to experience at that time. And therefore, it's not about blaming anybody else. Okay? So therefore, we now move on. So, assuming we're looking for our level of Jewish observance, whatever it is, and now we have people that we're dealing with, here's what we open up with. What's going on the other side? I'm here on this side of the fence, and I say, hi, I'm religious, we're almost there, I'm really doing a great job, I love this stuff, you gotta try it. Come join me. What's happening on the other side of the fence when they want, when you're trying to convince them something? What's going through their mind? So let's take a break from this board over here, and we're going to say what's going through their mind. Anyone else want to write instead of me? No? Okay, all right. What is going through the other people's minds when they see that we're religious or that we're trying to convince them anything about religion? Go.
They're different.
They're different? You wish that was the only thing that they thought. Yeah, okay. Huh?
You're nuts.
Good.
I respect you, but I don't do that.
Different. You're nuts.
He's going against.
Slow down. I respect. Do you really have that?
Yeah, several times.
From Jews, or from non-Jews?
Jews.
Really? Because you usually get it from non-Jews. They go, wow, I love your religion. It's so amazing. That challah that you guys eat, it's fantastic,
I
right?
I'm non-observant Jews at work, actually.
Really?
So places
they must be very far removed.
No. So
no?
Some of them are Israelis, some of them are...
Wow, that's amazing.
Holiday Jews, and I say, I need this day off because blah, blah, blah. And they'll say, I respect that you do that, but I don't.
Oh, okay. No, that's a different experience because they don't feel any coercion from you.
And some of them feed off me. They're like, I probably should.
Right.
But
so that's a different experience than the ones that usually a lot of times they feel like there's some sort of an affront that you're trying to present to them. You're trying to show them that you should be doing this. Like, you're going to eat that? I only eat kosher. Right? So when that happens, that's when they have pushback. And that's when they're not interested, and that's when they kind of run away. So when I was at work, you know, I had the non-Jews like, wow, this is fascinating. The Jews are like, yeah, anyway, I'm busy right now. I don't really have time. And that's my experience. In your case, it might be very different because they may feel very free with you and that you're not judging them and that you're not presenting anything to them. So it's different experiences. Maybe New Yorkers have a little differently. Maybe New Yorkers are a little more pushy when it comes to that. Okay, so you're different. You're nuts.
But I think, for Russian people, the most common, they're going to say, we did not grow up with this. We lived so many years without it.
And we were fine also.
We were fine, yeah.
Right.
It's too late for me.
Right? No, but what's going on in their minds? Is that what's going on in their mind right now when they see you religious? Too late for me?
I think they don't want to change.
They don't want to change.
They feel comfortable.
Okay, so now let's take the example. Someone sees you and you're this religious Jew who says, you know, by the way, I can't eat these things, not kosher. I keep Shabbos. I do all these things. And that's what I have. So what do you do? So what are they thinking? If it's a relative... Right? The relative is thinking, most probably you're nuts. Okay? I'm not doing this. I'm not joining up with you in this. You do your thing. I do my thing. I'm too old is not usually a question unless they feel that someone is telling them, hey, you should join me in this ride with me. That's when they're going to come up and say, I'm too old. You know, I don't like roller coasters anymore. I can't handle this. But there's another thing they might say, and that is that they're going to look at you and say, you must be part of some cult or some obsession.
You're brainwashed.
Brainwashed, right? You are brainwashed, right?
Boy.
I had a Rebbe in Yeshiva. They all used to say like this. Many of you, he said in the beginning of the year, many of you are going to, your parents are saying, oh, my son is being brainwashed. So he says, well, if brainwashing means we open your brain and we wash it out to make sure you have no schmutz in it, and that you can actually think for yourself finally for the first time in your life, yeah, well then I guess we brainwash. We clean you out so you can actually finally start thinking for yourself. Maybe that's what we do. We do brainwash you in that way, right? There's another thing that I have over here, and that is the following experience, and that is, you can say it in a second, it's a fad. Oh, no. They're not going to last. It's just a fad. I heard about this Shabbos thing. There's no way they're going through this. It's not sustainable. Yeah, I know there are some people do, but they live in Williamsburg or they live in Bnei Brak. But otherwise, it's just a fad. You'll see the light because it's just not normal. Okay? So this is a lot of the experience we're going through right now. One of the reasons why we're going through is because we're living in a time, especially not just with irreligiosity, one of the experiences that we're living with is people who do not believe in God. And people who, they promote respect for other people, but not when it infringes on my life. So I can't respect you if your respect means that you can't do things that's going to infringe upon me. And that's a difficult time that we live in, that people are less accommodating towards other people. They promote that they are, but oftentimes they're not. And that, especially when it comes to religion, this is a difficult scenario.
Well, on the brainwashing line, you're going against how you were raised.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Brainwashed? How would I say that?
I didn't raise you that way.
I didn't raise you that way, right?
Mm-hmm. They feel insulted that you're not respecting the way you were raised, right?
That's when we're dealing with parents, okay? So it's not always going to be that way. Parents to children is going to be the primary area you're going to have that. You're not usually going to have that when kids are trying to, the other way around. You're not necessarily going to have it that way. okay, so based on this, when I look at a person and I'm saying, what's going through your mind? Like I love keeping kosher. I love having, only 8 restaurants to choose from and not having 600 like you do, right? I love that. I love, sitting at home and not checking my phone an entire day. And, okay, for those that experience it, they're like, no, it's such a beautiful thing, Shabbos is like that time when I get to rest and I get to break from all of these things. And it's true, but that's not what Shabbos is all about, because guess what? 100 years ago, there were no phones. Nobody had them. And even if they had phones, it took forever to call somebody. So if you called someone, it was like whatever it was. You had to go to the switchboard operator. It took a long time. You didn't have technology that you were dealing with 100 years ago. It didn't exist. So it can't be that Shabbos observance is lack of technology. It happens to be. It's true right now, but that's not ultimately what it is. So the higher level experience that we have through these things. So in other people's minds, we might be different. We might be nuts. It's not for me. You're brainwashed. And you're going through a fad. This is some of the things that we have. Anybody else on what people go through on this? Okay. So now, once we're at this point, now what we're going to try to do is realize that oftentimes we are actually trying to do kiruv on everybody else. We want to be the kiruv professionals. We want to go out there and we want to convince everybody that this is how you do it. Is that really true? Well, I'll tell you, you're doing it without knowing that you're doing it, oftentimes. Sometimes it's blatant, like, you really should keep Shabbos. You are going to be burning, right? It's just a quite matter of how long you're going to be burning for and how hot it's going to be. But that's where you're going. So we say it in nicer ways, but like that's kind of how we present. That's some way, that's the extreme way. We'll call it some people's approaches, right? Right? Okay? That's one approach. Then there are other approaches that people take that are just like, hey man, you got to try this with me. It's so good, right? So we call the joint approach, right? It's the joint approach. The joint approach is like, you got to see what I'm seeing when I'm in this place. You got to see it's so good. Can you see it? Wow, right? So you want to convince them in this because you love it, not because you're going to burn, but because this experience is so amazing. That's what you want them to see. And then when that doesn't work, there might be some middle ground in this whole thing, and that is, I'm just going to do my own thing, and hopefully you'll see me, and whatever. When you ask questions, I'm going to try to invite you over and do different things. So those are some of the general approaches that we have. And basically, because we're on our journey, we want people to join that journey as well, which is a beautiful thing. The fact is, we want people to join that journey, because the reason why we're in it is, usually at this point, it's not because we're forced, it's because we enjoy what we're doing, and we see tremendous value in this. So if that's so then the question is, what are options? We have option number one. We can ostracize you, and we can tell you, forget it, you're out of my circle of influence, I don't want you part of my life, you're too much of a deadly poison to me, so get out. I'm the religious one, I can't have you in my life. That's option one, you can ostracize the person. Option two, as we said, you can convince the person. I can convince you, I can bring you closer, I can do something like that. And option number three is just a slowly distance yourself, right? It's what we call the, hey, let's just be friends approach, right? It's the classic boyfriend-girlfriend, I think we should just be friends, right? Which basically means I want nothing to do with you anymore, but I can't like throw you away, so let's just be friends, right? And that's the slowly distancing yourself. You'll see them at certain parties, certain holidays, but really nothing really much to do with each other. I don't have any animosity towards you, but I don't really have any connection with you. So you have three different approaches that people take. Is one is throwing them totally away. Two is trying to bring them closer as much as you can whenever I can. And three is just like kind of ignore. Ignore and distance. That's what generally people take. Is this another approach? What's another approach?
You don't have to always try to, like, with my parents, we see them, but I never try to convince them of anything personally.
Right, but they're still, you're being Makari of them. You're still bringing them closer. You're not planning to convince them. We don't expect necessarily, in your case, your parents to become Shomer Shabbos. But as long as they're part of your life, and they're part of your meals, and all these other things, so that's being Makari of them. You are bringing Makar with them. It doesn't mean you're trying to convince them, like, you know, really, you should keep Shabbos. Why don't you come light candles with me? You don't have to necessarily be doing that, but you are doing a certain sense of kirov. Anybody else?
Well, kind of on that line, I have parents who I'm not sure if they're really on that path of growing or not. I mean, they seem like they kind of are, but they say they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, you know, I try and include them as much as possible and whatnot, but then they always say, "Oh, but you realize we're never going to become religious."
Oh, I know this. It's a great line. It's a great line.
Never.
It's not. We're just saying we're not becoming religious because we're too old and whatever. All this thing, like, it's not fitting into our lives. They're like, "Oh, I totally hear that." Oh, don't worry, you know, because the answer is going to simply be, "Oh yeah, sure, yeah." But every opportunity we have to do another mitzvah is just remarkable, you know. Again, you say it, the analogy is like this. Brandon goes, "I'll never have $1 million. Oh, so you'll throw out the 20 and you won't put it in your pocket? There's a $20 bill on the floor. "I'll never have $1 million. Pick up the 20. You don't need a millionaire. Pick up the 20, stick it in your pocket. So the fact is you're not going to be religious. Oh, I know. Don't worry, Mom. I know you're not planning to become religious. But maybe you want to join us for a kiddush, you know? Maybe you want to join us for this. Oh, I'm never going to eat kosher. Except now, right? Right? So like, it's not an all or none attitude, because we know for ourselves it was never an all or none attitude for ourselves. We took things slowly for ourselves. We went through phases as we did this. Okay, really, before we ostracize, convince, or distance ourselves from everyone else, we have to do one other thing, and that is make a Kiddush Hashem. Sanctify God's name. What am I doing? Why am I doing it? Keep this in mind. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Because you have to answer the question, why are you doing it? Some of you may be doing it out of guilt. Some of you may be doing it because I was convinced and there's no other way around it, so this is what I have to do. And some of you may be saying that, you know what, I feel tremendous love. I feel like this is the right thing and I'm so glad, I'm so excited. So the key to all of this is I have to make a Kiddush Hashem. I need to sanctify God's name at every stage of what I'm doing over here. Is what I'm doing sanctifying God's name? You have to be sure if what you're doing is right. What do you mean? I'm standing up for God. I'm not letting these Shabbos violators in my house and stay out, you know? You may feel that, but the question is, at the end of the day, where is the Kiddush Hashem that you're making? Because you have to know that the people who you're fighting against, when we're saying fighting, who you're dealing with, are they really fighters? Are they really going against Judaism? Are they going against God? Or are they going against pushback of, I don't want this lifestyle for me? So you have to know how you're doing it, if it's really working, and if it is the correct approach you have to do. Okay.
What's the difference between they're pushing it like one way, or like they're against the God, or just pushing it, they don't want to do it? Isn't it like...
It's not the same. It's not the same, because most people are not well trained enough to really become to be atheists, right? They're not really trained well enough for that. They don't feel a connection. So for a person who says, I'm pushing back because I don't like a parental figure that's getting me in this way over here, so then they just have a problem with authority. It's not about a problem with God, it's a problem of authority. It's not about religion, it's about, if you ask me to clean my room, I'd say no. And now you just ask me to put on tefillin, it's the same thing as cleaning my room. So you have to know, am I doing it, are they pushing back because it's religious? Are they pushing back because they're pushing against authority? It's a very different experience. And if they're pushing back because it's about authority, so then it's like, wait a minute, I have to take a different approach. I can't be the authoritarian over here. I have to somehow bring them in a different way. You know, there's a concept that's small dochek, that the left hand pushes away, v'yamin mekarev, as the right hand brings closer. So there is a duality that we work with in dealing with other people. But our goal tonight is not to become the makarvim. Our goal tonight is really to be able to experience what they're going through within their thought processes and how we can express it to them. I remember I had a class once, I told you, never have a marker opened. Okay, if you ever have the marker open, you're writing on the board, then people always start staring at the marker and they follow the marker away. They're waiting for you to write all over yourself. So I have to cover it now, right? And they lose sight of the whole thing. It's covered. See? See, it's covered. I'm showing the camera, okay? okay, so when it comes to the kirv that we have, so we remember, we discuss what they might be thinking. Before we start doing the kirv on them, some of them may be too far away, as you presented. Like, it's really not in this lifetime that they're going to become religious. Like, it's not possible, you know? You know, my father, whatever it is, whoever the person is, my mother, she's, you know, 107 years old. I really want her to keep Shabbos right now. I don't think it's going to be possible, right? It's just too far. It's just like out of her ballpark. and I think there's an aspect that's, which is starting to do kiruv on ourselves. What does it mean to kiruv on ourselves, to be able to reach into ourselves? Even if we say, I'm already there. What do you mean? You know, I'm here in the class because I don't need to kiruv on myself. The answer is that I'm not really there yet. If I'm already looking that I got to reach out, then whoa, I'm in the place what's called I'm flaming. You familiar with this? This is a concept called a flaming Baal Tshuva. You might have heard of the term. If you never heard of the term, then you are a flaming Baal Tshuva. Okay? All right? The concept of a flaming Baal Tshuva is an individual who is what we call El Fuego. They are on fire. They're thrilled about the religion. They want everybody to experience this. And you better join me for this ride or you're going down. Okay? So this is the El Fuego, the on fire Baal Tshuva, who thinks that they're really all there and they have everything. So what kirv means, just to remind ourselves, kirv means to get close. Karov, to get close. Same word as korban, a sacrifice in English, but it really means to get close. It means you get close to yourself. But before I make anybody else try to see the light and know what's correct, I have to make sure, am I close to them? But more importantly, am I close to myself? What does it mean, self-kirev? Here's what I'm presenting as three ideas of self-kirev. Number one, how am I in my excitement in Judaism? Am I really excited? Am I enthralled about my Jewish experience? Number two, how deeply connected am I to myself? Do I know myself? Do I understand myself? And number three is, am I someone who presents themselves in such a way that other people will look at me and go, wow, that is a Jew. That's amazing. That's a remarkable human being. Those are three. Again, how am I in my excitement of Judaism? How deeply connected am I to myself? And last, am I someone who presents themselves to others as a Kiddush Hashem, as a walking Kiddush Hashem? So there are three stages that a Baal Tshuva goes through. It's important to note these three stages. I heard it from a shir from Rabbi Peretz Siegel near La'elef. Okay? That explains the three stages of a Baal Tshuva. What are the three stages? Can you guess? Stage one is flame, right? Which we call the romantic part of the relationship, right? It's infatuation. They're romanticizing about everything. Oh, I can't wait to put on tefillin tomorrow. Wow, those Shabbos candles were the most amazing experience. Wow, that cholent, I've never had anything like this before. That chamin, that gorma sabzi, whatever it is, right? That I'm experiencing is so, so amazing, right? So, you're blown away at this stage by everything that you hear. I just learned the Gemara today. Oh my goodness, you don't even know. You don't even know what's going to happen. I can't tell you about Mashiach. You have no idea. I'm blown away by this entire experience. And I just heard this amazing thing about Shabbos. Wow, my Shabbos is never going to be the same. It's going to be the most amazing Shabbos. So this is stage one. Stage one of this experience is this infatuation stage. During this infatuation stage, what happens? You cannot imagine that other people don't see what you're seeing. Go, oh my goodness, you have to. This is what he says. You have to hear this shiur from Rabbi Tatz. Come with me. You got to listen to the shiur from Rabbi Tatz. It is going to blow your mind away. And you take your friends into the shiur and they listen to you, go, how was it? It was okay. I didn't really understand the language. Well, I couldn't understand that South African accent, but whatever. It was okay. You know, you dealt with it. They weren't enthralled and you cannot understand. Maybe you were in a different shiur. You must have fallen asleep. You were on your phone the whole time. For sure you didn't hear it, right? So this is the first stage. The first stage that we have is a relationship that's out of love and infatuation. I'm so excited by this experience. that's stage one. That can last for a number of years for people. For some people, it could be a couple of months. Some people, it can be a number of years. The next stage, and they won't know when it hits them, the next stage is the backtrack stage. For any Baal Tshuva, the backtrack stage, and everybody goes through it, is, whoa, slow down those horses. 7 years later, you're like, what? You wake up, and this is his words, great words, you wake up, say, you know, whatever number of years, 10 years in, you go, where'd all these kids come from? Right? Why are there so many kids here in my house? Right? Right? The experience that they have is that they step back and they go, wait a minute, I used to play guitar. Oh, I love that shirt. Oh, man. Oh, that food was awesome, you know? And now they're back trying going, I feel bad because I had a whole life that I kind of left and it's not here anymore. What do I do with this life? I want this life back. And during this time, you don't have the same fire that you had before. You have questions because you're lacking some meaning. Why? Because what you did was you hid a good part of your personality. You hid a good part of some of your life experiences that, although they were good, but like they weren't, you know, had you been about tshuva back then, it wouldn't have been the stage you actually want to get to. You don't want to do it during that time. you're going through day-to-day experiences that are not like splitting of the sea experiences. You're no longer on fire from the class that you hear. You're living your day-to-day life. And you wish you had that motivation. This is in the backtracking phase that a person has. There's some regret that you have about the food that you ate. Not that you have regret that you ate it. You have regret that you're not eating it now. Right? I've spoken to many Bali Tshuva who tell me In-N-Out is by far the best. I don't know if that's true. Vote, In-N-Out?
In-N-Out.
In-N-Out by far the best, right? Right? There might be some other foods, you know. I don't know. Some people like, you know, look, if especially if you grew up Sephardi. So Sephardim will generally have a certain limitation of what they will do. Right? Meaning even if they grew up non-religious, there are certain foods they didn't eat. Ashkenazim is like, fair game. Come on. Who wouldn't eat crab? Sephardim like, crab? And I can eat crab? No way. But Ashkenazim, it's fair game. So it's a whole different world experience, I believe. You'll tell me otherwise. Right? You had talents that you left dormant for many years. You didn't go through those experiences. And it's a difficult stage. And this stage can last some time. It can start after 5 years, 10 years, some people 20 years. They wake up 20 years later wondering about these things and they have a difficult time. And then comes what we'd call the final stage, or as Rabbi Siegel presents, is integration. Integration is how I actually deal with where I want to be and where I was, bring them together, see the value of what I have, what my life is all about, and bring those two together. Working with your gifts and your talents and bring them together. So stage one and stage two, bring them together. That's the level of integration. When you can reach integration, you're going to see it's so much easier to talk with people who are less religious, who are not religious, who are not Jewish. You're going to have so much easier time doing that because you're going to feel a level of confidence with yourself and how you're going to deal with your parents, with your relatives, with your kids, grandchildren, grandparents, and the like, and everybody that's around. In that gamut, you're going to have a much easier time dealing with them. That's the integration stage. So again, it does take time, but note that you're going to get there because you're going to have a much more greater sense of clarity for yourself and how you're going to do everything. Okay, so now I'm going to go through some practical ideas that we have based on some of the things that we've already said. We can go through some practical ideas, and then next week we're going to delve into some of the harder issues. Some of the harder issues are going to be some of the halachic controversies that we're going to be dealing with. So, for example, next week we're going to deal with, or at least try to deal with, things such as, well, my family wants me to go to a non-kosher restaurant. Well, that, you know, that's one. They want me to do something that I'm going to have to violate Shabbos, or it's going to be difficult for me to keep Shabbos, or whatever, but they feel like I'm ostracizing them or they're ostracizing me. They want me to attend a marriage that I would not feel comfortable attending and things like that. How am I going to be able to deal with those things? Okay, so these are some of the questions we're going to try to deal with, not this week, but next week. Okay, so we're going to go to the levels of what I call the how-tos. So, how do I navigate? How do I integrate? And how do I help people? Okay, so I'm going to open the marker now. Okay. How to, okay? This is a great trick. My students know this trick. It's a fantastic trick. And it works almost all the time. There's one word. One word in a gerund form. And that is try. Here's the goal. T-R-Y. In camp, it's N-I-C-E-T-R-Y. Anybody? N-I-C-E-T-R-Y, that's the way we spell nice try. Okay, great. Okay, here's how it goes, okay? that's when your teammate really, really botches something up, you know? It's like they swung out at bat, you're like, okay, and they have to dug out as furious because you just lost the game. Everyone's like, N-I-C, okay. So we've all experienced that, okay? The first thing is, I'm trying. I'm trying. And this is one word that's an amazing experience. One simple word really is going to quiet down the crowd and prevent any flare-ups. Why do you do this? Well, I understand why you have to keep Shabbos. Why can't you just like drive one for 5 minutes or 10 minutes? Why do you have to keep this kosher thing? I understand, it says in the Torah, but why do you have to do this? And it's the questions on the attacks of the wise. And are you going to do this now? Now you're not going to approve of me. You're not going to invite me to things. You're not going to join things. You're breaking up the family kind of questions. And you say like this, listen, I'm just trying to keep kosher. I'm just trying for myself to see if I can observe a little bit more Shabbos. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying. I don't say I'm doing it. This is who I am. I'm just trying. I'm trying to do this a little bit more for myself. So when you say I'm trying, you've basically declared for them that, A, number one, I'm not putting it on you. And B, I'm not even there yet. So I'm just trying, you know? Take someone who's never held a baseball bat before. And you go, what are you doing? I'm just going to go bat a cage. You know how to swing. I know, I'm going to try. I'm just going to try to swing. Okay? So when you say, I'm trying now, it kind of lessens the pain that they think you're doing something against them and think you're doing something that's going to truly rock the boat. I'm just trying. Okay? Any questions on this idea? Or any comments on this idea?
Brilliant.
Okay? Brilliant. Thank you. Right? I'm just trying. That's it. I'm just trying to do this. You see, you try, you know, like at home with, you know, with people that are on your side. Try it with them to see, like, what does that mean? You know, I'm trying. You know, obviously it can backfire a little bit, but you're trying with people that you care about. You know, like, whatever. If let's give a home example. Is there a home example? How come you never take out the trash? I'm just trying to be more relaxed at home. I'm just trying to appreciate the fullness of this house. You know, with the trash full, it's an amazing experience. I'm just trying, right? Tremendous diffusion. It's an amazing experience, right? You totally diffuse it.
How do you play trying, like when you put scissors, right? You can hide them in and they don't see it once you put them out. Oh, you're crazy.
Oh, good, good, good question. How do you deal with scissors? Oh, you're crazy. Well, first of all, they're judging. So at the moment of that judgment, you diffuse that judgment by just say, you know, the Torah mentions about putting on these fringes, and you know, I'm just trying to take upon myself this idea because it's a mitzvah that doesn't hurt anybody and it doesn't get involved with anybody. So I'm just really trying to see if I can make this a part of my life. That's it. I'm just trying. Oh, okay. I guess so. Right. I was listening to a shiur from Rabbi Brog. He says like this. He was approached by somebody who goes, what are those fringes? What are those fringes you have? A non-Jew approaches him like in the airport. What are those fringes you guys have? He goes, well, these fringes are actually part of a secret service. And those that wear these fringes, we're trained killers. And so, you know, it's a secret code within us, but we're actually trained killers so that, you know, we're actually there to protect other people. Okay.
Several years ago, I was with some friends, and one of my friends was just starting to become religious, and he had his tzitzis on, and we weren't going to, like, a nightclub. And the bouncer was like, that's gangster. Like, you can't come in. And he made him go to his car and take him off.
Take him away. Couldn't even tuck him in.
He couldn't even tuck him in.
So the gangsters are wearing tzitzis now. Amazing. This is amazing. There's a divine protection with tzitzis. Now we understand why they're wearing it.
Rabbis come from this rabbi, you know, the world.
There you go. You know, we know that's a divine protection for tzitzis. Not the ones that they're looking for, but okay, that's a great story. That is a great story. Okay, so the first one is, I'm just trying. And that's a key word, and you use it. It's a tremendous level of diffusion when you use this word. The second thing is, do not become a preacher of Judaism. Don't become a preacher of Judaism. What does that mean? Unless they're interested in hearing more about it, don't go and try to force it down their throats. Okay? This is what it means, force it down their throats. You might think that it means something like this. Hey, you know you really need to keep kosher. That's not just what it means. Here's what it also means. It's like, hey, you know, I heard, you know, that reminds me of a Devar Torah that I saw about Avraham. You remember Avraham? It reminds me, can I show you about the story about Avraham? Anyway, so Avraham was really special and Sarah was amazing. Like, where are you coming from over here? Right, you're shoving this thing down my throat. You've become a preacher in such a way that they don't want to hear about it. So the key over here is, unless they're interested, wow, that's fascinating. Tell me about this kiddush that you make. I want to hear more about it. I've always been interested in that. If it's something like that, that's a very different experience than you trying to look for a segue, and the segues are always poor, but you're looking for a segue to try to impart a Dvar Torah or something else that you're doing it. And that leads into the second thing, and take your point, right? Don't just throw a Dvar Torah. I've seen too many Bali Tshuvas do this, but it's even non-Bali Tshuvas that do this. They try to throw what I call a Dvar Torah grenade. They throw a Dvar Torah grenade at the table, because what's the main reason why you're sharing a Dvar Torah? I can't be sitting at this meal without any Torah. This is terrible. How can I be sitting at this meal without any Torah? What's one reason? One reason is because the mission in Perkei Avos tells us that if people are sitting and eating together and they don't have Divrei Torah between them, it's like they're eating Zivchei Mason. They're eating the sacrifice of dead people. Well, I don't want to be eating sacrificed dead people. Hey, everybody, Dvar Torah. Let me just share this with you. Oh, you know, it reminds me. Yeah, you were mentioning about the Broncos and the Raiders. It reminds me of something that happened with Lot when he was in Mitzrayim. Yeah. Also, yeah, it was fascinating because something about the football you mentioned to me, it reminds me when they're serving salt. Yeah, it was a Sodom. Yeah, football Sodom, right? And it's like there's no segue here. You're just like throwing in a grenade. You're trying to get this thing over, and it's just not. It's not a good mix. So again, if they're interested, that's one thing. But if they're not interested, then your goal is really in making the Kiddush Hashem. So we're putting on the board over here. Don't be a preacher. Don't become a preacher. Okay.
question about that coming.
Yes.
So if they say something that about Judaism or about sharing their own behavior that has to do with Judaism, but you know it's wrong, do you just let it go?
What does that mean? Give me an example, an easy example.
I can drive on Yom Kippur to the shul. They accept me there. I like this rabbi. Okay.
Yeah, it's okay because it's better that I come to Yom Kippur, to services than if I don't.
I feel that I can come there.
Okay, so that's a good question. So for those that didn't hear it, the question's like this. You know, someone says to you that they have a misinformed understanding of Judaism and they want to know, and they don't want to know. They're just telling you. They're actually not interested in hearing it further. They don't really know. They're telling you that this is okay. This is obviously okay, this form of Judaism. And now, again, the question is, are you defending the throne? Are you defending the throne at this point? That's the question I'm asking you. Are you defending the throne?
Yes.
For whom? For you or for them?
For me.
For you.
For them too, I think, a little bit. Want to educate them because they might not know.
But they're not willing to listen to
them. Meaning, if they're at the point, let's put it this, if they're at the point that they drive to Shul Yom Kippur, and almost 90% of semi-practicing Jews know that you shouldn't drive in Yom Kippur, but they just do it because that's what their synagogue allows. Are they looking to be convinced? And if they are, so the question is going to be is, how are you going to, quote-unquote, prove them wrong in what they're doing? You know, how are you going to prove it? No, you can't. Why not? Well, because it says in the Torah, Shabbat Shabbaton. Shabbat Shabbaton means, Kol melacha lo tasu, you're not allowed to do any melacha. There's another passage in the Torah that says, Lo sevar eish b'chol moshe oseichem, you're not allowed to light a fire in your dwellings, and therefore lighting a fire, driving a car, you're not allowed to do, so therefore Yom Kippur, Shabbos is all parallel. Is that what you're doing? That's not what you're doing, right? You're not giving them biblical text proofs to show that they're wrong in what they're doing. What are you telling them? You go, you're wrong. That's it. That's my problem. You're wrong. Okay? How do you know I'm wrong? Well, because I follow Torah, you don't, you're wrong, you're goy. That's what it comes down to, right?
No, but even if you're going to tell them from the Torah perspective, saying Shabbos, Yom Kippur, it's all together. You know, all the holidays.
That's exactly what I'm saying to you. They're not interested in a proof text to know why they're right or wrong. Because their basis of religion is not about this context. They don't have a context of, I really would love to understand why. They don't question, why is Yom Kippur Day given for forgiveness? Why is Yom Kippur Day of tremendous holiness? They're not questioning it. It's just something that they do traditionally, and it's a life experience that they have. They have some guilt that would go, and tradition why they go. But not because, like, wow, I'm... It's not like they're thinking, like, during El, I'm so excited for Yom Kippur. Like, you have no idea. Yom Kippur is coming in 50 days. Like, I am so excited. I cannot wait for that Day of Atonement. There will be a few people like that, but they certainly are not starting at El time if they come to Shul 3 times a year. They're not thinking Rosh Chodesh El goes, oh, I heard the shofar, my goodness, Yom Kippur is in 50 days from now. I don't even know, or 40 days from now. I don't even know how I'm going to deal with this. Most of them are not thinking that. So before you jump into the answers and defending the throne, you have to ask the question. The guy says, I'm driving to shul. It's like, oh, wow, okay, let's move on. I'm going to go. And that's why I think in many of these cases, for you to defend here, it's like, where are they coming? Why are they telling this to you? The reason why they're telling this to you is because they need to justify their lifestyle and let you know that their lifestyle is correct. Right? So they're also eating cheeseburgers, they're also doing other things. Why bother pick on Yom Kippur? So what do you pick on? How do you do it? You have to bring them into the field. Okay, if we are talking about this and we're talking about some element of Kiruv, how are you doing this? One is, instead of the Dvar Torah grenade, number one, instead of, you know, defending the throne, it's that you have to see them, that you have to bring them to your level. What does it mean to bring them to your level? Is that they still see you as some person that's on the fringe. Whether it's these fringes, or just on the fringe, that you're like, you're out there, buddy. Ma'am, you are, like, you're gone. My Judaism is not your Judaism. I don't do this, whether it's too late or whatever, it's out there for me. So what am I going to do? I have to bring something that they do to a sense of light. Bring them to a sense of light that what they do, I also agree with, and I think is really amazing that they do it. What does that mean? Something in morality, often. Something that they morally do, where there's something at business that they did that, you know, they took care of somebody, they gave tzedakah, or they didn't cheat on this, or they had a moral question they were dealing with, and they chose this path. They go, wow, that really is amazing. You are such a special human being. Wow, it's amazing that you did that. You know, especially dealing with parents. Parents is a great gift that you have when it comes to parents. It's really a separate line unto itself, but it's the thank you. Okay, I'll have to go back to the other one in a second. The thank you is like this. It works phenomenal on parents. The thank you on parents is that you go with your parents, you call them once in a while, and you tell them this. I had a Baal Tshuva that we did this over a six to eight month period while he was in Israel, and it was great. It worked really well. And the thank you is you just call them and you just, hey mom, I just want to thank you for everything that you do for me. It's just, you know, as I'm going through my life experience, I realize that you have done so much for me in my life, and it's just like, wow, I'm blown away. You know, and I'm thinking about, you know, when I was in elementary school and you took care of me for this, and you know, when I was in high school, it's like, you are just, wow, you're something special. Like, you gave me so much life and you give me so much life. Right? Your parents are like, what is he drinking? Like, what is this, New Year's? What, has he been up all night? What's going on over here? But in the beginning, they think that. And then when it's like the third week or the fourth week, they're like, this is nice. Yeah, my son's pretty cool. You know? I like this whole religion thing that he's taking care of. He's thanking me every week and he's showing me how much he appreciates that, what I did for him. He never did that before. And now suddenly he's doing it. It doesn't matter if your parents are 180 years old. It doesn't make a difference, right? You just tell them that. They're like, wow, this is amazing. You can tell it to other people that are not your parents as well, other relatives, other people like that. You can tell it, and you give them these thank yous for the things that they've done for you. Then they begin to like open their eyes and go, wow, maybe this person is not so, you know, on the other side of the fence. Maybe they're really warm and caring. And I'll tell you like this. I had a boy that I was dealing with, and his parents were standoffish. One of his parents was very standoffish. And we took this approach, and in like 3 months' time, you know, I said, how's it going? He's like, my mother is like awaiting with bated breath every week for me to call. She's like thrilled to hear anything that I'm learning in yeshiva, everything else in there. Like, she's just like, it's an amazing experience. She loves us, you know? Because I'm thanking them, I'm having this level of Hakara Satov. Because Judaism teaches us the idea of Hakara Satov, of tremendous gratitude. So when we put it real in people's lives, then it's like, wow, it's an amazing experience. So that's the thank you experience I just wanted to share with. It doesn't mean we're getting them to the level of super religious, you know, that they're following everything, but they will appreciate you more, and they will have tremendous respect to you for the things that you're doing. So back before, we said this whole concept of moral understanding. And that's really, we'll just put it over here. We'll call it, it's called praise. Praise their awesomeness. How do you spell awesome? Right? Praise their awesomeness, which means instead of throwing the grenades at them, instead of trying to convince them or push back at anything they say, just find how things actually match Torah ideals when they're actually acting as a good person or they take certain steps towards doing certain things. So, like, wow, you're such a caring individual. Like, it amazes me to see how much of a caring individual you are. It's like you're praising them, basically. You know, it's so amazing how you're so careful to do the right things with money. It's really a remarkable thing. I love the way that you helped that person here. You did X, Y, and Z. And you're basically praising them for the things that they do. Because now you're no longer this general, army general, or Rambo that's trying to infiltrate their life. Rather, you're someone who sees them as a person of tremendous giving, tremendous caring, or tremendous moral fortitude. So
I have a similar kind of experience with that, but not quite that, but... For example, I have a friend of mine who isn't religious, and he knows that I'm on that path and whatnot, and he tries to tell me, you know, why he's not going to become religious, but then he always makes a point telling me, yeah, you know, I think I'm about to get engaged to this wonderful Jewish girl, blah, blah. So would, like, praising him be like, that's great, I look forward, you know, I hope it happens, I look forward. Would that kind of be like...
So in your scenario, you even take it one step further. I look forward to that. I even say, like, I'm so glad, you know, I'm so glad you chose to marry, you're choosing to marry, you know, a Jewish girl. That's a really amazing thing. Wow, you're such a dedicated Jew. You know? It's a nice way to praise him for that, what she's doing, you know? Basically, what we call it, it's called, you know, I have a cousin, Rabbi Brizak, who shares this idea. He does in parenting, catching them doing things right. Right? When you deal with parenting for children, you have to catch them doing things right. Instead of saying, like, oh, get your feet off the table, you go, wow, so you cleaned up the table so beautifully today. You catch them doing things right. Same idea in that scenario.
So, like one of the examples is me. Like my mother tells me, oh, we're going to go to the cemetery. And I'm just like, I'm going to cemetery only once. Why? I'm saying because I'm only allowed to go for the yard sake of my father. Like, it's not the place to worship, right? You don't, like, you go once and that's it.
So
you have to go every month.
So the answer to that is, the first question is, hey mom, if you can say that, but I know you don't call her mom, right? You say, what do you say?
Mama.
Hey mama, right? So you say, I know it's so meaningful because you have such a deep connection to dad or papa, whatever, right? I have such a deep connection. You know, and I feel that connection as well. I just want to find out if we should be going every month, or maybe it's not so good for his soul if we should do that every month, and maybe there's other ways that we can actually connect to his soul without having to go to the cemetery. But I love the fact that you feel that deep connection, because I also feel that amazing connection as well. And let me just find out, let me get back to you. You call back a few minutes later when you find out, not when you made up that you called somebody, but when you actually found out, right? Like, oh, hold on, I just spoke to him. Unbelievable, the rabbi was sitting next to me. I couldn't believe it, right? No, we're talking about you actually found out, right? And then you call back and say, if it's true that there's no leeway on it, it's not a good idea. And again, you praise it for that. You know, I love that idea. I think it's such a beautiful idea that every month to be able to connect to that. I found out that for the soul, it's not the ideal way to do that. The soul keeps coming back down and feels a certain sense of anguish. If it's true, I'm not sure it is or it isn't, but let's assume it is. And it's better to just go on the yurt site, but maybe there's another idea what we can do in order to do something for his memory so you can feel deeply connected. Maybe, you know what, maybe once a month you and I will go out to lunch together. Just you and I, and we'll talk about Papa and we'll do something else in order to commemorate him. You know, we'll light a candle in his memory.
Like I'm saying, like, let's go on the yurt site. We're Jewish, let's do it the Jewish way. You know, like, you believe it or don't, we can go, instead of going on a secular day, let's go on a Jewish day, You know, because that's where it's coming from our traditions. I'm not.
You mean to go to the on the yahrzeit, you're saying?
On yahrzeit. No, 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 that's how I used to. I'm just like, why, like, light up candle on the yahrzeit, you know, Jewish. No, that's how I do it.
Oh, yeah, that's fine, again, because in some people, you're not necessarily going to change certain people, especially if they're a little too stubborn. You say, okay, that's fine. So you don't want to light that, no problem. I'll light it over here. Don't get involved. You know, you don't have to get involved. You tried it once, it didn't work, you don't get involved. But you acknowledge that it's such a beautiful thing that you're lighting that candle. You know, I found out, and this is another way. It's like trying. You go, I just found out. I just found out you know how to drive on Shabbos. Unbelievable. I just found out. But like, this is a brand new thing for me. I just found this out, right? Mama, I just found out that lighting the candle is such a beautiful thing. It helps the soul in such a way. I just found out you're not supposed to do it on the secular date. You're supposed to do it on the Jewish date. Unbelievable. Anyway, if you want, I can help you. I'll remind you when that is, and I'll come over and we'll light the candle together. No, no, I want to do it my way. Okay. But I just found out. Okay, that's another, I'm going to put it over here so you can never forget this one, right? It doesn't always work. I just found out you can't eat pork. You know, it's like, it doesn't work, right?
I was driving one Shabbos and I knew that I'm not driving next Shabbos. And I'm saying this is the last Shabbos I'm driving.
Yeah, but you knew for a long time.
No, but I knew that it's going to be a change and I'm not driving anymore.
Okay, that was when you made...
Shabbos, what difference does it make? You know exactly.
Yeah, because the point is that you came to that determination for yourself that I'm turning over that leaf. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to roll. Okay, we have a little bit left, and then we'll close up. Right. there's another concept that you have, especially with dealing with close relatives, and that is acknowledge that what you may be doing is abnormal. It's a little abnormal. If you're doing it for a while already, they've probably come accustomed to it. Because they got out of it's just a fad. And you can acknowledge them in a sense of humor. I saw that Dr. Lisa Aiken, she has a book. It's called, what's it called?
I remember.
Survival Guide to the Baal Tshuva. Baal Tshuva Survival Guide. You can look that up. It's a great book also, right? So she has a concept over here. Acknowledge that what you might be doing might seem abnormal to them. You can make a joke of it. Yeah, it's like, I got these fringes. I was walking by a paper shredder and like my whole shirt just like, you know, in pieces. Just like that. And this is what's left, you know? You can make a joke of it. What are these fringes? It's a paper shredder. It just totally took me out. I'm so glad it didn't get any further. I don't know. I would be left with nothing over here. Luckily, I caught it just in time, right? You make a joke of it. So now they're already dealing with it, you know? Dealing with the whole experience that you have. You know, what's with you guys in keeping Shabbos? Look, the Seventh-day Adventists, they're doing this, you know. I can't let them be the only ones that have this party. I need to be part of this party also. You make a joke of it, let them feel the experience, and this way they're not going to feel that much animosity towards you in the whole thing. at the same time, you can acknowledge and say to them, you know, hey, listen, I can only imagine what you're thinking. It's like, you know, you're watching me keeping kosher, Shabbos, the whole deal, putting on this, doing this, dressing this, covering this, doing all these things. I get, you know, all these things that I'm doing. And you're going to respond to them. I can only imagine what you probably think. It's like almost as if I walked into your house and one day I see you like scrubbing the walls with a hairbrush. I'm like, what are you doing? What? I just learned it that you're supposed to take a hairbrush and scrub the walls. Yeah. And it's better if you have one with sharp bristles instead of the ones with soft bristles. It's doing great. Like, what are you doing? What are you scrubbing the walls with a hairbrush for? I just learned it in my law. That's what they're looking at you. They're looking at you as if, like, you're taking a hairbrush and scrubbing the walls for no reason. It's like, so why do you keep kosher? Well, the Torah says you can't have milk and meat. Like, what's up with that? Right? I need an answer. Give me an explanation. Or that one you can understand. Maybe I can explain. There's so many other ones that you can't honestly explain to people because either we don't know or it's just too, you know, difficult to explain. And that's the hairbrush. They're scrubbing a hairbrush on the walls. So you can say to them, I get it. You know, I get it that it's kind of like, imagine if I were to come home and see you scrubbing a hairbrush on the walls. Be like, what are you doing? I can understand. You might think of that with me. So I just want to let you know that I get where you're coming from. I feel that. And it's I can understand where you're coming from. When I learned it, it was eye-opening for me. And now I understand it better. I really see a divine light for me, and it's a whole different life experience, and I'm so appreciating life more. But I get it that you might think I'm just taking a hairbrush and scrubbing it on the walls. at the same time, you also want to say to them, I'm not here to change you. you can always throw in that line, I'm not here to change you, but if you would experience what I'm experiencing, wow, you would be there with me. I'm just letting you know. I don't expect you to be there. But if you were there with me, wow, you'd never want to go back. It's such an amazing experience. That's a little selling point. It's a slight selling point, but you don't have to go there. Question? No? Okay. lastly on this. What, you have something?
I was just telling him that his aunt thinks, who's not Jewish, thinks Judaism is really, really beautiful. With more, she thinks it's like the best thing in the world. But our Jewish family is like, oh, whatever.
Because she's not Jewish.
Yeah.
So what's the reason why the non-Jews feel so excited about it? It's one major reason why the non-Jews are excited about it. There's zero commitment from their vantage point. So I look at your Judaism like it's a beautiful painting. Wow, that's amazing. Well, and if I sit here, why don't you take a brush? I'm not painting. Right? So the Jews see it as commitment. They see it as restriction. It's too difficult. The non-Jews see it as beauty. It's a beautiful painting on the wall. And that's oftentimes you have that experience.
Well, it's like she said, so you actually get to have this nice dinner with wine every Friday night?
Right.
Wow. You know, right.
I could totally do that, right?
Kosher food.
So when I was at the company Payne Weber many years ago, so one of the guys there, he was non-Jew, and he comes and goes, wow, you Jews know how to party. Right, that's what we're known for, you know? You Jews know how to party. I went to Albany. You know, Albany is a party school. Man, you guys had that Purim? Wow! That was amazing! I've never seen anything like that. You guys are out of control. You know how to party. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much what we do. You know, after we take our tefillin off, we do this every night. We pretty much every night, you know? So that's their experience that they have with us. Like, they'll pick and choose what they want, you know? It's like a whole different world. Okay, last thing for tonight, and that is, I miss over here. We're just going to write down over here. One is acknowledge. Spell acknowledge for me, please.
Acknowledge.
Okay. Acknowledge that it seems shaky board. Last thing today, which we did mention, but I just put it over here, and that is don't defend. What does it mean, don't defend, over here? So here's the story. Here's our board. Okay, again, how to. Trying, or I just found out. I'm trying to do this. Don't become a preacher. Thank you, we said, especially with parents. Praise their awesomeness. Why you did this so amazing. It was such an amazing thing you did. Acknowledge that it may seem crazy. And lastly, right now, for tonight, and that is don't defend. So hard to read this handwriting. I apologize. Okay? I cannot even read it myself. You ever write something down and you're like, what did I write? I get that all the time. Maybe because I'm a lefty and I'm writing sideways on a shaky board. Okay, now I get to close this, right? So don't defend. Don't defend, right? Okay. So number one, you don't need to be the rabbi or Rebbetzin. You don't need to be the defender of the faith. You know, we are let it drive on Yom Kippur. You know? So now what do I do? What do I do? If they question anything that you're doing, well, why do you do this? Why do you do that? Here's an idea that Dr. Aiken presents also, that she presents in this way. Great question. That's a great question. You know I need to do this, whatever it is, but let me get back to you on the why we do it. But it's a great question. It really is a great question. Like, I know I have to do it, and I'm going to continue doing it, but let me get back to you on the why. But I love the question that you're asking me. So now you've just validated them, that their questions have validity, and they're not something that you have to push away.
And that with non-Jews at work, like they ask me why, like, why did you do this? And it's like one thing, and it's like 10 whys. And then
10 whys. Right, it's just a great question.
Last week, like, she kept asking why, and I said, there was something that I didn't know, like, don't ask why, because I don't know. I just know it's something that we do.
Right. But another way, in your case, it's not, you don't have to answer to them. And they're usually inquisitive, as opposed to the ones who are attacking. Right? The attackers are the ones that, you know, you feel like you have to defend. In those scenarios, you tell them it's a great question. You can say the same thing over here, but it's a great question. I know I need to do it. And I don't even know the verse or why we do it, but it's a great question. It's a great question why we do it. Like, the classic one that comes up is, it doesn't really come up. because they don't see people doing this, that Jews will ask this question, like, why do I have to tie my shoes differently? Well, how come you're supposed to put your shoe on this way and then tie this one, tie that one, and it gets so confusing, it's like a hokey pokey, right? You put your right shoe on, then your left shoe on, and then if you're a righty, then you tie your left, then you tie your right. If you're a lefty, you tie your right, then you tie your left, and it's like, what? Which way? I don't know what I'm doing, what are you doing, right? So that's like the famous question that people ask when they hear about this scenario over here. Go, that's a really good question. I have no idea. I've been doing it all this time. I have no idea. You know, I want to look into that. Let me try to get back to you. Okay, that's one. The other answer you can say is, look, you know, I have so much more to learn. I'm so glad you're asking these questions, because I would also like to know these questions. I'm doing these things. It's a great idea. So I have so much more to learn. So I'm no longer becoming defender of the throne over here. I'm telling you that I'm an average Joe. And therefore, like, I need to figure these things out also. So I'm glad you're asking these questions. Let me take your question. I'm glad I'm asking these questions. I also want to know the answers as much as you do. That's the best way. I also want to know the answers as much as you do. Like, they don't want to know half the time, but I, at least as much as you do, I want to know the answer. I might want to know even more, but I want to know the answers as much as you do.
Doesn't that make you look kind of foolish?
Why?
Because people might think you were totally brainwashed. You know, like you're doing things that you don't know why.
Oh, good question. You're brainwashed. You're doing things you don't even know why, right? So, anyone have an answer?
No, but so is the Constitution. Do we know everything about the Constitution? We can drive 100 miles per hour on the freeway. We get a ticket just because we get something right away. You know, we can see it.
Right. Oh, okay, right. So just to answer for those that didn't hear it, right? We don't know why we do it, but like the Constitution of the United States, if the speed limit says 55, how come here it's 55, here it's 65, here in whatever, Indiana, it's like 120, right? How come it's over there that I can do these things, and here I can't? I don't know. That's the law over here. Maybe I should look into it, why that is. Maybe they voted on it. Why is it that way? I don't know, but that's what I do. It's what I usually call the plane analogy, right? Hey, you want to go on a flight with me? We're going to New York. We're going on whatever, United, Delta, whatever it is, like... Yeah, but I don't really know how to fly a plane. Oh, don't worry, you don't have to know how to fly it. Someone else might. But how does a plane actually work? Oh, I don't know how a plane works, but it works. So let's just go. Yeah, but let me learn how a plane works first, and then I'll buy a ticket. Right? It's not a pure analogy. It's not a purely good analogy, because what he's saying over here is someone else is flying a plane. Somebody else knows how it works, so you don't have to worry about that. But maybe I do need to a little bit more technology. So the answer is, look. The part of the answer, because I don't have a pure answer for this question, but part of the answer I would humbly suggest in this case over here is, look, there are a lot of things that I don't know, but I have the general framework. And I understand that this is correct in the general framework, and I know what's right and what's wrong. So there are going to be plenty of things that I don't know, but there's a group of laws. And as long as I do understand the basic idea, and then I follow those because I do understand that, and I do see the light in that, so there are things that I have not yet learned the whys, but I've learned the how-tos, but not the why I actually do it. So it just takes a little more time to figure those things out. And that's why I do it, because in Judaism, you can actually do without knowing why. It's better to know the why, but the world of action that we live in, it's better to actually, it would be better to do than to just simply meditate on these experiences. Since we live in this world and God put us in a world of action, you do. You don't just ask why, you don't just meditate, you actually do. It's good to know, and it's better to know the whys. I don't have all the whys. So right now, when I don't have the whys, I will do until I can actually do the do and the why together. That's how I would answer that. What's your rebuttal?
That's assuming you don't know the answer. Because from my perspective, you're saying not to defend, you know, just brush it off.
He's saying, but if I do know the answer, so if I do know the answer, you have to evaluate what is the person asking from a religious inquisity? Do they really want to know? Or are they looking to just throw something at you and see if you'll grab that bone? By the way, who says you can't drive on Shabbos? It says in the Torah.
So, question.
Well, let me just answer that, right? It says in the Torah. Where does it say in the Torah? Well, I have it right here. Right?
It doesn't say you can't drive a car in the Torah.
Right, but it does say that you're not allowed to light a fire, and every time you hit the gas, you know,
so
the pistons are...
Explaining.
Correct. So the question is, do you want to know why? Or are you just like asking because you feel like you need to defend yourself for what you do? Because I'm happy to share with you, but I don't know if you... Do you want to know why? You can... Without asking that question, you can usually gauge in the person in there how much they're excited to hear what you have to say and how much they're not excited.
But every time you start asking this question, saying, do you want to really know why? Oh, no, I don't want to.
So usually you don't even ask that question.
Coming back.
Usually you don't even have to ask that question because you know who the person is when they're coming at you. You can sense it. Why do you guys do this? We do that. Oh, well, that's not a sign of a hug. That's a sign of you're crazy, right? So, like, you know, you go, you can say, look, I'm happy to, why don't we go out for coffee? I'm happy to explain it. I can even show you proofs as to why we do it. It's okay, I'm not that thirsty. That's the end. They don't want to know.
So, on the topic of non-defunding, so kind of, can be very general, you brush it off, but the person keeps bringing it back time and time again, and you keep brushing up, but they're so stuck in this thing that something that you know they're wrong, is trying to say that something says in the Torah, which I've never heard of.
They say something says in the Torah or something.
Yeah, saying, oh, because my rabbi said so. I don't know what kind of rabbi this is, a non-denominational reform, whatever. I know, like, it's wrong, but I've brushed it off time and time again. But the person keeps bringing the same thing back.
So the simple answer to that is that the brush off that I'm suggesting is not a pure brush off. It's saying to them, hey, I need to investigate. And then you go investigate. And then you call your rabbi or someone that you know who knows the stuff well, Rabbi Google, right? Or somebody else that you have a deeper relationship with, you know? And then you say, you know, it's interesting. I looked up that question and I spoke to my rabbi. It's actually not true. You're actually not allowed to.
But then they're still determined that it's done, right? Not for that.
Oh, no. So, okay. So if you're able to find me that proof, I'd love to have that. Because I was telling my rabbi that I was speaking to someone at work, and they said they have it in the Torah, and he said it's not there. So if you have that proof, I'd love to be able to show it to him.
I did that, and he still keeps bringing it back.
What? What do you do?
Okay. So my boss, actually, I got into this debate with him. He's determined that something in the Torah is there or it's not there. I'm like, show me.
What?
He says, what was it? What did I tell you? He says that Moses wasn't circumcised or something. And he tells me this. My boss does very inappropriate things. And I'm like, I've never heard of it. Like, show me where.
Okay.
I don't know. My rabbi told me. I'm like, well, I'd like to know where.
Okay, so it says he was nolad mahal. He was born circumcised. That's what it is. Just the answer is that. So, I'm just pointing out to you that the question itself, he's like thinking, oh, so you don't have to do it. So, no. We have a few people. Adam, Noach, Moshe were born nolad mahal. Yaakov Avinu, nolad mahal. They were born pre-circumcised. Okay? What does it mean, circumcision? Circumcision, when they're circumcised, they were born perfect. Okay, that's what the concept behind it means. Does that mean that they don't have to go through any procedure? No, there's a small procedure you have to go through, but they were born in that way, they were pre-circumcised. What does it mean? That the whole nature of their souls in these bodies were that they are perfect human beings, and therefore they already had a higher level of spirituality than anybody else. So yeah, I hear you're right. You know, he was born circumcised, that's why he didn't have to have that circumcision. Great question, boss. Great question. What the Torah is telling us, it's actually not explicit in the Torah, it's a Rashi who's quoting a Medrash, but I'm happy to show it to you, is that the idea is that are born with this. Now, nowadays, rarely is that ever found, but it's coming from very high souls of a high experience. But the Torah says over here that on the eighth day you must circumcise your son. So unless a person has that, even biblically, you need to have that circumcision. So when it says that Moses didn't have to have a circumcision, it's because he already was circumcised. But I'm glad you brought that up. It's a fascinating whole concept. You know, he'll stop, right? But that's the general idea. So whenever you're stuck in a scenario like that, you want to be able to say, like, I'm going to get back to you and ask someone who knows this stuff so you can get there. So we're going to go through our quick review. Okay, quick review. Number one, people are going through different things in their mind when they look at you and your level of religiosity. You have different ways you can approach them, whether it's throwing them out, bringing them closer, different things you can do. You have to work on yourself and feel, can I feel connected to myself when I'm dealing with other people? We said that there are three different stages of Baal Tshuva, how they go through different experiences of that infatuation stage, of the backtracking stage, and then of the integration stage. And then we mentioned all these things over here, we said that in some of the how-tos I have for this week is, I'm just trying to do this for myself. I just found out that you're not allowed to do X, Y, and Z. praise their awesomeness, compliment them on something that they're doing that's related, that's a moral issue, something that is Torah related, or is just a moral related, which obviously is Torah as well. Don't become a preacher to them. Don't tell them that you are going to throw any Divrei Torah grenades at them. Don't do other things that they feel like forced down their throat that they have to learn something now because you're the religious one. Give thank yous. That works works really well with parents. To give them thank yous for the many things they've done in your life. Acknowledge that it might seem crazy, some of the things that you do, the hairbrushing analogy on the wall, and don't defend. And give yourself a little bit of buffer time to be able to say, I love that idea, I love that question, let me get back to you on that, so you can come up with better answers. So this is generally what we have as our part one. Next week we're going to try to go a little bit more in depth in some of the difficult questions of how to integrate and being able to stand up for our values and halacha at the same time, while integrating and making them feel good and making them respect us on a different level. So thank you everybody for coming. We'll stop for tonight. Yeah.